And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today we're discussing a subject that is affecting families and caregivers all around the globe. We're talking about Autism Spectrum Disorder, commonly known by the acronym ASD. According to the definition of Autism Spectrum Disorder available via the Centers of Disease Control, ASD is a developmental disability that can cause significant social, communication, and behavioral changes. The Centers of Disease Control also estimate that in the year 2000, about 1 in 150 children were identified with ASD. In 2010, the rate had increased to about 1 in 68 children. ASD is almost 5 times more common among boys, 1 in 42, than among girls, 1 in 189. Our guest today knows all about these facts because he is the Director of Global Education and former CEO of the Autism Treatment Center of America. His name is Ron K. Kaufman. Mr. Kaufman works with families, children, and professionals from all around the world, and he brings a distinctive qualification to the realm of autism treatment, his own personal story. As a child, Mr. Kaufman was diagnosed with severe autism and recommended for lifelong institutionalization. Instead, his parents developed the Sunrise Program, which, as it will soon be obvious, enabled their son to completely recover from his autism. Now, Mr. Kaufman is an international speaker, a writer, a teacher, and a graduate of Brown University with a degree in biomedical ethics. Today, Mr. Kaufman bears no traces of his former condition, and his life was the subject of a best-selling book and an NBC television movie. He has written many articles featured in journals such as The Autism File and Good Autism Practice, and has been interviewed by media such as National Public Radio, BBC Television, Fox News, The London Telegraph, and People Magazine. He was awarded Best Presenter at the Autism One National Conference and is the author of the book Autism Breakthrough, the groundbreaking method that has helped families all over the world. So it is with great pleasure that we welcome you to our program, Mr. Kaufman. Thank you for giving us your time and joining us here at Lifestyle Improvement.
Hi there. Hi there, Rebecca. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So I tell you what, when I saw your book, the first thing that came to mind was the set of loving parents that you have. Obviously, the story of your life is inspirational and full of courage. So tell me, this remarkable story is started when and how did it develop to become what it is now, your life mission?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So as you said in the introduction, my parents were given an incredibly grim, not only diagnosis, but prognosis. You know, all the predictions they were given about all the things I was supposedly never going to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And this is, by the way, that was back in the 70s. This is still what parents encounter every single day when they get an autism diagnosis, mm-hmm. these incredibly grim and pessimistic prognoses. So my parents were given the same thing. And at that time, I was a really severe case of autism. I was not a mild case. I had zero language, no eye contact. I wouldn't even let people touch me. I was very much in my own world. I would spend hours and hours every day rocking back and forth and flapping my hands. And actually, one of my favorite things to do was to take kitchen plates, mm-hmm. put them on their edge on the ground, mm-hmm. and spin them like a top. But I would do this for hours and hours and hours and hours. My parents were told I had an IQ of less than 30 and that this was a permanent lifelong condition. I mean, that was drilled into their heads. And so, you know, it still bowls me over what they did in the face of that. Mm-hmm. It would have been really easy and actually incredibly understandable, mm-hmm. for them to buy into that and go, oh, okay, I guess this is, you know, this is really with nothing we can do about this. But they really turned their backs on those really dark predictions, and they developed their own home-based, very much child-centered program, which, as you said, they called the Sunrise Program, mm-hmm. but they spelled it S-O-N because I was their son.
Right,
and,
right.
you know, if I'd been born a girl, they would have had to rework the whole title.
Oh, but, my goodness, yes.
but that's what they called it. And they really built this program at first just around me. They were not trying to create a new phenomenon in autism treatment. They were not trying to help parents all over the world. Mm-hmm. At this time, they were just trying to reach their son. So they did this and they worked with me every day for about 3.5 years. And at the end of that period, it didn't happen overnight, took 3.5 years of hard work. At the end of that period, I recovered, I just was recovered completely without any trace of my former autism and lived I guess what you'd call a normal life.
That's
and
amazing.
Went to regular schools and, graduated from Brown, and all of these things were just never supposed to be in the cards for me. And what's amazing now is that at the Autism Treatment Center of America, which is this nonprofit organization my parents started in 1983, I get to hold hands with our 80 other staff people mm-hmm. as we help these parents to help their kids in exactly the same way that my parents helped me, and with some incredibly startling results as well.
Wow.
So I feel just nothing but gratitude for that.
That is a fantastic story. And like I said, so very inspirational. Now, you recently came out with a book called Autism Breakthrough, the groundbreaking method that has helped families all over the world. Now, I'm sure you've given me a little bit of a start on that. Tell me more about that book.
So I wrote Autism Breakthrough. It was really a labor of love for me. It was something I've spent the last 17 years working with families who and many educators who come to our center, and also traveling to many other countries and other states in the U.S. to work with these families and to do lectures and workshops. And one of the things I really found was two things. Number one, parents get this diagnosis, then they get a really grim prognosis, and then they're usually shuttled down one alleyway, meaning they're sort of given one option of treatment, if they're lucky, and they're not told about other ways forward. So they get usually shuttled into very, what you would call behavior-based treatment modalities. This is the dominant paradigm in autism treatment, where the whole idea is how do we stamp out the behaviors that we supposedly don't want in our kids and promote the behaviors that we do want. And this is, it's a very behavior focused approach, because they sort of see autism as almost a behavioral disorder. And how do we change the behaviors? And what my parents saw really early on was that autism is not a behavioral disorder. It's a social relational challenge. Mm-hmm. That is the central challenge. That is why a 16-year-old with Asperger's syndrome, who's highly verbal, and a 5-year-old with typical autism who has no language, they don't have a single behavior in common, but they both are on the autism spectrum because they have this central challenge. And so what that means is, rather than trying to force these children to conform to a world they don't yet understand, we start by entering their world first. And we start by not asking ourselves, how do we change this child's behavior, but asking, how do we create a relationship with this child? How do we get this child to want to create a relationship with us? And so coming back to Autism Breakthrough, the reason I wrote the book is I'm talking to all these parents. One is they're shuttled down this one size fits all behavior-based treatment, which in many cases doesn't work well with their kids and is really demoralizing for parents, because you're spending all day saying no, no, stop, stop to your child. It can be very, very demoralizing. So that piece. And the other piece is we have many hundreds and actually thousands of parents who come to our center, but there's also parents who can't get there yet, who are either in a remote town in America or in Zimbabwe or Romania or someplace like that. And so I wanted to give them something that they could cheaply put in their hands that would give them a bunch of techniques they could do right now in their home. Educators can use it as well, but it is focused a lot on parents. Mm-hmm. And where they can have a new way forward with their child and reach their child, form a relationship with their child, and get really different results than they might be used to.
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuke practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
It really seems like you have put your entire life into this book.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I really have. I mean, it was such an incredible experience writing the book. And this is not a book, by the way, about telling my story. I tell my story in the first chapter, but every chapter after that is a how-to. It's here's how to do this with your child. Here's this technique. There's even worksheets in each chapter. And actually, each chapter has a separate corresponding webpage with videos and stuff to help you.
Wow.
So for me, it was like, I almost felt like I was relearning and re-going through the whole process. And I was imagining as I was writing it, what is it going to be like for these parents to read this for the first time, hear a really different approach to their child, and then try these things and have their child, you know, look at them and smile for the first time, mm-hmm. or say, I love you and really mean it for the first time, which, mm-hmm. by the way, has happened many, many times.
That's
and
crazy.
So for me, it was a very, you know, people think of writing as a very intellectual pursuit. But for me, this book, it was a very emotional experience.
That makes total sense. And so as you are summarizing this to me, it seems to me that the difference between your program and the behavior analysis is exactly that. That this is not exactly about behavior, it's about connection.
You know what, Rebecca, that is a wonderful way of putting it. It is actually not about behavior, it's about connection. I love that. This is powerful because almost every approach to autism starts with a fundamental misunderstanding of what autism actually is. And so because of this misunderstanding, we end up focusing on the behaviors. And here's what happens. Look, can you get a child to do a particular behavior if you drill it into their head all day? Yeah, you probably can. I've seen kids doing behavior-based programs who learn particular behaviors, but it's like you're missing the forest for the trees. Basically, what you end up doing is, yeah, the child will robotically do this behavior, but they're not taking any joy in it. They're not learning to love people. Quite the opposite. They're often feeling very alienated from the very people who love them. Their experience, look, they're in their own world. Our job is to get them to cross the bridge to our world. And we need them on our side for that to happen. We can't drag them across that bridge. And so when you try and pound these behaviors into them and stop them all day from doing the stuff they love and the stuff that is helpful and satisfying and calming for them, all you're doing is you're alienating that child or adult. And it's funny, you're sort of saying, you're giving them this experience of the neurotypical world that is, you know, very unappetizing. It's really interesting when you think about this. I always tell parents, every minute that you are with your child, you are like the ambassador of the neurotypical world. Mm. And think about this, right? If you meet, if you've never been to France, you meet one French guy and he's rude to you. What do you think? Oh, the French are rude, right? Because you don't know. You just met one guy, but that's your vision of France now. You meet a French guy and he's really sweet to you. And what do you think? Oh, the French, they're so sweet,
right?
So that's your child situation. They're like in a different country. You're the representative of the country of the neurotypical. Mm-hmm. Every time you stop your child, say no to your child, constantly move, you know, say quiet hands, put that down, stop that behavior, do this other thing that you don't want to do for no real reason other than the adults say that you should do it. That's their experience all day, every day. So they're learning that this is what being part of our world looks like. And then we say to ourselves, why don't these kids want to be part of our world? But it's abundantly clear to me when I watch this exactly why these children don't want to be part of our world. So what we say is we are the ambassadors of the neurotypical world. We want our children to think this world is the best thing since sliced bread. We want them to be scrambling across that bridge. And what we find is when we connect with these kids on their own terms, in their own language, they start to trust us. They start to look at us. They start to smile at us and include us in their play. Mm-hmm. And we become almost like their best, most trusted friends. And when we do that, they will climb mountains for us. Mm-hmm. They will cross rivers for us. And that's what we want. That is what we want. And one last thing I'll just say about this, which is because I'm describing it as a global picture and your listeners may not get sort of what does this look like in practice. So I will just say this. We have a whole bunch of different techniques, but let me just describe the first one. The first step that we always do, and this is, I describe this right at the beginning of Autism Breakthrough. It's called joining. And I'll be honest and just say, this is probably the most controversial technique of the entire program. And what it is when a child is stimming, and what that means is they're doing these sort of repetitive, ritualistic behaviors, often to the exclusion of everyone else. It might be something simple like ripping paper or spinning plates like I did. Or if the child is verbal, it might be more complex, like they're talking all about airplanes and every model of airplane built in the last 57 years. These are often called stims. We actually don't call them that because we see that as kind of a pejorative name, but I'm going to use that because that's what people will know. So when these children are doing these repetitive so-called stimming behaviors, everyone's trying to stop these and redirect these. And by the way, when I was little, they weren't only stopping them. They were electric shocking these kids.
Oh my goodness.
They were doing what we would call horrible torture to try and stop these kids from doing this. And thankfully, this doesn't happen anymore, mostly because parents just will not tolerate that anymore. Thank God. But what we do is not only do we not stop these behaviors, but we actually join in with and literally participate in those very behaviors that everyone is trying to stop. So if a child is ripping paper into little strips, I take my own paper and I rip the paper. And I'm not doing this to imitate or mimic the child. Mm-hmm. I get really into it. I'm basically saying, oh my gosh, you love ripping paper? Well, listen, I love you. So I love ripping paper. I love ripping paper maybe more than you love ripping paper. When I would spin plates as a kid, my mom would do this with me. She'd see me, she'd get a plate of her own, she'd spin plates with me. And people said to her, oh, this is the worst thing you could possibly do. I mean, you're going to make it worse. You're going to reinforce the very behaviors you're trying to change. This is terrible. And I am so grateful that she didn't listen, because what she would do is she would spin these plates with me. That is the first time I ever looked at her, smiled at her, started playing with her, was when she was doing exactly those. And we've now been doing this for over 30 years with older kids, younger kids, adults, kids from over 100 different countries. We've never seen it make them do it more. What we always see is the more we do this, the more these kids become interested in us and let us in. And that's what opens the door to all the other teaching and growing that happens.
So that is their language, and you use it as a bridge.
Oh, yes, really. I'm not trying to be nice to you, but that is very well said. That is exactly what happened.
You're explaining it so well, I'm understanding. My question there is now, this is beautifully said, but it's a definite shift in perspective to what, like you said, is being done right now. And now you're training parents that can help their children up to school age. But how about if that parent does not catch on to what's going on or doesn't hear your information? The child goes to school and the program is obviously quite different. So how do you work with that teacher in the classroom that has, you know, a curriculum to deal with, another 10 kids in her classroom? What magic do you do to make that work there?
I wish I knew the Jedi mind trick. I'm not familiar with how to do it. Here's the thing. Look, we are not in the game of trying to sort of force or push people to do things they don't want to do. So let me back up a little bit and just say, this is fundamentally a parent-directed program, meaning at the end of the day, and I've seen this, of course, in my own experience with my own parents, at the end of the day, we trust parents. Nobody has the kind of love and dedication and, in truth, long haul commitment. They're going to be there in 10 years when the teacher isn't. And even day in, day out knowledge and understanding of their child, no one has those things the way a parent has them. No one even comes close. Mm-hmm. So that's why we focus on teaching the parents, because when the parent changes how they are with their child, that is when we see the biggest changes by far. And that also comes from this perspective of the parents are the ones, we want them to be the ones making these choices for their children.
Right.
So knowing that, we don't actually try and force or get a parent to do a sunrise program. Who doesn't want to do a sunrise program? If a parent, I've had some parents come up and say, we're doing an ABA program, we're satisfied with our ABA program. I'm not trying to get that parent to change. I think that's great. I support that parent if they're finding results that they want from what they're doing. So coming back to the school question that you're bringing up, a lot of the kids we work with are in schools. We have some parents who are doing the Sunrise program full-time at home. We have some parents who are doing it as an after-school program. We're even having parents sometimes who do it as an evening and weekend kind of thing. And so then we have a bunch of educators who also come to our center. We have this program called the Sunrise Program Startup. It's like the startup is basically the intro program that parents and sometimes educators come to. And so when educators are open to this, we welcome them with open arms. I have been surprised lately at how often a parent will find some teacher in the school who is more flexible and more willing to try a new way. mostly because they're seeing the old way isn't working. But then, yes, there's lots of schools and teachers who are not flexible in that way. And we help as best we can. If, again, we find if the parent knows where they want to go, that's going to be the biggest factor in the child's favor.
You know, that is a really clear explanation as far as having to deal with those two worlds, because it's really a dance, I'm sure, that you have to do when you're helping a family. And talking specifically more about caregivers, obviously, you know, the program really is focusing in to a great degree on training those caregivers to be able to enter the child's world. And then this becomes part of the motivation that the child has to interact back and forth with the caregiver, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead and develop on that.
So, okay, it sort of sounds like there's a couple questions in one. So let me throw out some ideas. So number one is, after we join a child in their world, so a child's ripping paper, we're ripping paper. A child is spinning an object, we're spinning an object. Or if a child or adult has Asperger's syndrome and they're talking a lot about trains and different models of trains, we then listen with avid and excited enthusiasm. We want to be part of this, right? So we start there. But obviously, that doesn't magically teach kids how to speak in sentences if they're not speaking, or use the toilet if they're not toilet trained. Obviously, it's not magic. It's core way that the brain works about building trust in a relationship. Mm-hmm. We're trying to build a relationship around a common interest, which, is, by the way, is the way human beings have been forming relationships for millennia.
Exactly.
This is new to autism, but it's not new to the human race. So we're starting there. Now, once we do that, we're getting these children on our side. They're starting to open up to us and look at us and interact with us. We call this a green light. When we have a green light, then we are challenging these kids. We are teaching them new things, everything from, like I said, toilet training to speaking in sentences to having conversations, all of that stuff. And it's very socially focused. I will say this, even though we do teach kids to be toilet trained and brush their teeth, we're focused heavily not on academics, but on helping kids be socially adept, because that's where everything else springs from. Mm. And in truth, that's what every parent tells us they really want at the end of the day anyway.
Right.
And parents don't come to us, please help my child get to grade level at math. That is not what happens, right? They want their child to say they love you and really mean it, or laugh at a joke because they really think it's funny, or have a best friend or a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And that's our specialty. That's what we do. So we're doing that. And then what you brought up, Rebecca, which is this whole issue of motivation of the child, is once we have that green light and the child is connected to us, they're engaged with us, we build these games that are designed to be very educational. They're designed to stretch the child, teach them new things. But even those games are based around whatever that child finds motivating. So if a child really loves trains, we actually helped many children, but one in particular that I'm thinking of, who his mother was trying for over 6 months to toilet train him, no luck. He loved trains. She built this whole game around trains where she had the tracks go all the way into the bathroom and around the toilet. And in about 10 days, she had him using the toilet of his own volition. We had actually a girl I write about in the book, in Autism Breakthrough. She had Asperger's syndrome. She was about 15. Mm-hmm. She could talk up a storm, but she couldn't have the most basic social conversations. Uh-huh. And she loved to pretend she was Jerry Springer fire these very outlandish questions at you. And we showed her parents how to actually build a whole game around Jerry Springer, build it like pretend they were in the studio and everything. And that was actually how they helped her to have a more typical, regular conversation about what she liked to do on the weekends and what they liked to do on the weekends. So this is also something that we teach caregivers, for sure. We teach caregivers how to do this. We teach parents. We teach occupational therapists, speech-language pathologists, and teachers. And it's really amazing to get when you have a whole team working together on the same page like that. But I just want to reiterate, at the end of the day, the parent is the CEO. No matter what a teacher or a caregiver, no matter how well-meaning they are not going to be around in 20 years. And you are. And you love your child something special. Nobody can match that. So at the end of the day, the parent has to be the one to choose here. And that means if they don't choose the Sunrise program, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But if they do, if they are seeing results, that means we try and spend a lot of time helping them build up and get stronger in sticking with what they're doing that's working, even if someone else is naysaying them or saying, well, we don't want to do it that way or whatever, because it's the parent that's in charge at the end of the day. And that's exactly the way we want it.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387, extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com.
Lifestyle Improvement Radio is now online. Listen to our interviews at your convenience by going to www.lifestyleimprovementradio.com. If you like what you hear and would like to hear more about a specific subject, send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com and let us know what you think. Support our sponsors and let them know you heard about them at Lifestyle Improvement.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Ron K. Kaufman. Mr. Kaufman is an international speaker, a writer, a teacher, and a graduate of Brown University with a degree in biomedical ethics. He is also the director of global education and former CEO of the Autism Treatment Center of America. Please join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for part two of our interview with Ron K. Kaufman.